This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go,
man. I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Wednesday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Appreciate it. As always, the DA Show is heard across the wonderful CBS Sports Radio Network on hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Also on Sirius XM, Channel 206. And stream us using the CBS Sports app, the radio.com app, or Apple Music. Watch us at watchda.com, inside the radio.com app, or now on Twitch. Joining us here on the show, our next guest is one of the greatest offensive linemen ever. He played 13 seasons in the NFL, a legendary career that included a bid and a place in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and a spot in last year's NFL All-Century team, NFL's 100 all-time team. Joining us is our friend, Anthony Munoz. Anthony, good morning.
DA, how are you doing? It's good talking to you again.
You too. It's always great to have you here on the show. And this could be an exciting season for the Bengals if we do end up playing football because Joe Burrow's their new quarterback, number one pick. He brings some magic in from LSU after last year, but no offseason for a rookie QB. If we do have this season played, what type of challenge does Joe Burrow face having not had any offseason?
Well, first of all, I know there's a lot of optimism here in Cincinnati, not only with Joe Burrow because he's what everybody wanted and everybody needed here in the city. You look at the draft, and I think overall this organization, I think with free agency and the draft, is almost kind of, you know, starting a new culture. You look at the free agents they sign, I think just about all of them have playoff experience, so hopefully they'll bring that in here to this, you know, kind of a new group of guys. Joe Burrow, you mentioned, the number one pick. But you look at the seven picks of this draft, and six of them were team captains. One of them was a three-time captain. Three of them, their dads were high school coaches. So to me, that kind of changed a little bit of the culture. One of the kids, T. Higgins, I talked to a coach who knew his position coach really well and said if he had come back for his senior year, he's an unbelievable young man, would have probably been a captain himself. So you're right, no OTAs, no off season. I guess we're kind of going back to the old days. You know, I look at when I would report last week of July, we would put the pads on, get ready, and then all of a sudden you go through a little preseason and you're playing. We didn't have the OTAs and we had maybe one mini camp during the season, and as a rookie, I know I came in as a number one pick. They gave me the playbook and said, okay, let's go. You're going to be the starting left tackle, and I know left tackle is a lot different than quarterback, but there's going to be some challenges like there always is for a rookie quarterback, but from what I hear, what I understand, this young man is a smart young man, and he's all about getting it done, so hopefully – he doesn't go through big adversities as a rookie, and hopefully we get the season going and see what he can do.
How much would you have loved to have no preseason games and just have training camp right into regular season game number one, no hitting?
Well, you see, 13 years I played, so no hitting in camp, no pads during the week, maybe top 20 years in the NFL, maybe.
Yeah.
You know what? We played a little more preseason. We probably played half at times. The only thing I would have liked is during camp is to see some stunts live, see some one-on-one live, see some run live, see some ETTE, some ET scrapes. That's all that I wish I would have, and then I'd have been ready. You know, I think you need that. Not having all the preseason, I know as someone that, you know, came in and started and all of a sudden was a starter for, I would have welcomed that with open arms.
Anthony Munoz is our guest this morning here on the show. Do you think that because the offensive line is so much about chemistry, familiarity, understanding one another, that we're going to have, it's going to be a real problem to have good offensive line play early this season?
You know what? I think we might experience it a little bit, maybe a little more than what we've been experiencing lately, because I really believe with the lack of hitting the last several years, as I watch, it takes a little bit of time for the cohesiveness, the togetherness to come together with a lot of offensive lines. It doesn't matter how long you've been playing with each other because you don't have that one-on-one, that game live during camp. You see a little bit of preseason. But now you don't have, you know, probably none of that. So I think it's going to take a little longer. You'll see some of that. But hopefully it won't take that long. And I know who's going to want it to be a short time. It's going to be the quarterback. He doesn't want that to happen too long.
How weird would it have been if you were playing in front of no fans? I mean, that must have been such a huge part of every Sunday, feeding off the energy of a full stadium or even a half-empty stadium, but knowing that you have 30 to 40,000 people there minimum every single Sunday, no matter where you play in the NFL, and sometimes 70 or 80,000 people, how weird would it be to play without fans?
Well, let's put it this way. If we'd have been playing in Denver on the road, I would have welcomed it. That way I could hear my quarterback, Boomer Esiason. If I was home at the Jungle, I would have wanted, we had about 58, 59,000. It would have been very strange because when we were playing there, the crowd was unbelievable. It was one of those, you know, kind of cookie-cutter stadiums where they're right on top of you, kind of Three Rivers, the Vet. They were right on top of you, so it was great to have your fans. And so home, I think it's going to – you'll miss that. I think on the road, too, it kind of motivates you when, you know, people are screaming and yelling at you and they're totally against you. But it's going to be very strange.
Anthony Munoz is our guest this morning on the show, a member of the NFL's 100 all-time team, one of the greatest offensive linemen ever. And you've always had a great message. You've been an incredibly positive guy. You have, I think, affected a lot of people in a really positive way. And you're continuing that because now in the middle of coronavirus and everybody's life being turned upside down, you're looking to spread positivity, and part of that is through the Victory Beyond Competition campaign, where people can recognize that they've dealt with loss and try to find positives beyond that. So what drew you to this? Had you had an experience before, experience of loss? Were you feeling a certain way during coronavirus and wanted to connect with people through something?
Well, you know, I think a lot of what's going on now is kind of re-sparked it. It's always a Victory Beyond Competition has always been a tagline that I've used through my last couple years in college and the NFL because I believe as an individual you can't, you know, really lay everything on, you know, being at camp, winning games, losing games. You know, there's times where you're going to lose. There's two big losses I had on the field as a member of the Bengals. It's, Super Bowl 16 and 23. I love to win probably more than anybody. I hate to lose. But you have to move on. You know, your victory does have to be beyond competition. And I think as individuals, it doesn't matter if, we're athletes, parents, coaches, fans. I think we need to look far beyond the wins and losses. And really, you know, you can go to, you know, the website victorybeyondcompetition.org and really look at what that means. And for me, I experienced Victory Beyond Competition when I was playing in the NFL, and I understood that my main audience was God. Okay, that was my main audience because he motivated me through the gifts he gave me, and I wanted to please him through my performance. And, you know, so that was my whole victory beyond competition, is that I understood and start to, not that I totally understand, but I'm understood then that that was my victory beyond competition. My competition was trying to beat the Steelers, the Raiders, the Browns. But, you know, as I mentioned, my two losses, I had to have victory beyond those losses, Super Bowl 16 and 23. And that's where, you know, right now I'm involved in this cultural campaign dedicated to sharing how, you know, we all, I mean, I would ask you, what's your victory beyond competition? And, you know, so I look at that and I say, what a great time now as we're having to reset, as we're having our routines really just readjusted. You know, we have to be, you know, I look at it as an offensive lineman. If we call the play and we went up to the line of scrimmage and right away I noticed that's not the defense we need, we have to audibleize. You know, there's times where, you know, we're faced with COVID-19. We can't go to this function. We got to audibleize. We got to learn how to do things differently. So that's really what this whole campaign and why it's so important to me, you know, victory beyond competition. And for me, I found it, you know, 43 years ago in my life, and it's something that I've really implemented in every part of my life as a, you know, NFL football player, as I just shared, but as a husband, as a father, now as a grandfather, as a community member.
Positivity is so important, especially during this time. People can get down really easily. They can look at hardships. They can look at how much life has changed. They can look at what things they can't do anymore. And they could worry about negativity seeping into all parts of their life. I think a lot of people's mental health has taken a lot of toll over the course of the last few months. And so spreading positivity is a really important thing. And finding gratitude, yep, and thankfulness in what you do have instead of things that have been taken away from you is really important. So when you talk about finding victory away from competition, that everybody can do so, what are maybe some examples for our listeners that on a daily basis you could say, oh, that's a win. That's a win. Oh, that's good to me. You know, that's
well,
a positive.
Well, I think you use a great phrase, spreading positivity in times when people really need it. I mean, it doesn't take that long just to encourage people to, you know, to be respectful, to, you know, regardless to, you know, you might not look like me, you might not live in my neighborhood, but let's spread positivity. Let's help people. I mean, you might see someone that's in need and, you know, your first reaction is just to drive right on by. Nah, stop and ask, do you need some help? Is there any way I can help you? And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned spread positivity in times when people really need it. You know, we're gonna do a little giveaway here. If you go to the website, victorybeyondcompetition.org, and make sure you use the hashtag victorybeyondcompetition. I'm gonna offer to sign a football, autograph a football, maybe a call from me. You know, for if you let us know that you're spreading some positivity, and you know, we want to reward you by that. You know, just to say, hey, thanks for doing that. We appreciate it. And not only do we, but I'm sure that the individuals that you're spreading that positivity to is going to thank you and be very thankful. And so that's what this is all about. And I love being a part of this cultural campaign.
For a chance to win an autographed football and a phone call from Anthony Munoz, go to the website, victorybeyondcompetition.org. Again, victorybeyondcompetition.org. Think of it as VBC. He's one of the greatest offensive linemen ever, one of the greatest football players ever, Anthony Munoz. And he's a friend of the show, and we really appreciate it every time that he joins us here on the program. Anthony, it's always great to see you. When I see you at Super Bowl, it's always great to have you here on the show, my man.
Yep.
And I love what you're doing here. So thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
D.A., thank you very much. As you know, most of the times we're always talking football, maybe some other issues, but appreciate the opportunity just for you and I to converse and talk about this. So, again, it's always a pleasure being with you, so thank you.
You too. Thanks so much, Anthony. Anthony Munoz joining us this morning here on the show, and I have just so much respect for Anthony because, you know, I've talked about this very often. You know, I'm a child of the 80s, and so my football experience is very interwoven with those years. I began really watching football in 86. My dad was a huge New York Giants fan, still is, and so I grew up that season when I was 70 years old watching the 86 Giants. And throughout the 80s, you know, being totally glued to the TV, and then the 90s as well, and that's when I became a teenager and then went to college in the late 90s. But Anthony Munoz in my childhood was larger than life, one of the greatest offensive linemen ever. And to know him a little bit through this show and to have him on the show regularly and to meet him at Super Bowl, and It's amazing to meet guys that are not only as great as you see as a football player on TV, but also great people. It's really inspirational. And, you know, it dovetails into a tweet that I got today, and I hope Mike is okay with me reading this tweet, but I hope that he is. He's a longtime listener. And Mike tweets, DA, just wanted to give you guys a shout to you and the crew, because between the pandemic and my personal life, it's been a rough 4 months. But the show has kept me in good spirits every morning and sets the tone for my day, which is a positive one. So thank you to you guys, DA, Mraz, AB, and Pete the Body Bilotti. And Mike, I really appreciate that, because one of the things that I think is really important that I strive to make sure that the listeners are aware of is that if you look hard enough, there's a positive in almost everything. And it's a choice. And I hope to be at least some part of positive in your lives. You know, whether it's consistency, because you know that we'll be here every single day. Maybe it's a laugh that you get. Maybe it's something that you think about. Maybe it's just something that you're able to put onto the background and from normalcy. Oh, I just know what they sound like, so that's good enough. Whatever that is, that I hope that we bring that. And it's why little Mo connects to me so well and so dearly. And I respect him, and I believe in his message so much. I mean, here's a little Mo that has gone through years upon years of chemo and cancer treatment and has never, ever been negative or cynical or angry. He's only been upbeat and positive. And man, if he can do that with his circumstances, we can all do it. It's a choice. It's hard to train yourself sometimes to not get angry. It's hard to train yourself to not be negative. It's hard to train yourself to not be cynical, but you can do it. And when you see the world around you that's lashing out at one another and people fighting with one another and people disrespecting one another, and you see social media or politics or news coverage or just people in general being angry or negative, remember, that's their choice. They don't have to do that. They're choosing to do that. And you can choose the opposite. And so no matter how bad things get, and things have been scary and anxiety-ridden for a long time now for a lot of people, and people have dealt with death and loss of jobs and financial hardship, but there are positives. And you just have to find the things to be grateful for and to be thankful for and the people that you have gratitude towards. And Anthony Munoz just is that. He just has always been that. And Little Mo is that. And those are the people that I really, really, really cherish and respect and try to remember when I get angry or when I get disappointed or frustrated or I feel like lashing out. I try to remember, man, you know, I know people around me that have been better than me in this situation. So I got to try to be better than I am. And guys like Anthony Munoz and Little Mo help me do that. When we come back here on the show, the Little Giants reaches its conclusion, the annexation of Puerto Rico, and a win for the ages. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Come on, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
We go back 5 years ago, actually. Check that. We go back 1 year ago. And so 1 year ago, I guess I saw a subway rider chewing their fingernails, and I was all types of annoyed. Here is this day in mothership history.
He's digging in, getting right into the crannies, right into the corners. It's just trying to, they start the end and then they tear off the entirety of the top of their finger. It is so gross. Look, you might as well just have a bum sneeze in your mouth. That is the equivalent of chewing your fingernails after you have touched things on the subway. Also note that these people, you know, to get your Metro card, you have got to basically use the touchscreen Metro card pad when you go in there, so everyone's touching the same touchscreen. Touch this. How much money do you want to add to the Metro card? You get this. Swipe it through. You are touching everybody in New York City's everything. And then you're chewing your fingernails on the subway? You disgusting human. You are just a little gremlin.
855-212-4227.
Just a little itty-bitty, disgusting, sewer-infested gremlin. It is heinous human behavior. Awful. You know, awful.
They are the only...
Why not just have one of these hobos that are living in the subway in their own filth, okay, passed out for weeks in their own filth, why don't you just actually eat sushi off of their belly? Why not just put the sushi roll on top of their belly as they're sitting on one of these benches, heaving up and down, and then just eat it right off of their belly?
That's a good question.
Because that is the equivalent, okay, of you chewing your nasty, gnarly little fingernails on this subway.
Some nachos off their face.
Seriously. Oh, just gnaw on one of their moles. Just gnaw right off their neck. That's what you're doing.
Correct.
I love the fact that Jody Mack sneezing is the equivalent of a hobo sleeping in his own filth on the New York City subway platform. So we normally, for Mothership at the Movies, only do two on-air segments, and then we do a off-air PGP recap. But we have not had enough time to truly break down the ultimate, the final scene, which decided it all in Little Giants, the play known as the annexation of Puerto Rico. This is set up because the Cowboys had held a 21-0 lead. Little Giants come roaring all the way back in the second half to tie it up 21-21. My first point is this, Mraz. Awful clock management by Kevin O'Spears, because...
One of the greats.
O'Hara?
Because how does he not just run the ball with Spike up 21-0 and grind clock the entire second half? How do you even give Little Giants enough time to have three long touchdown drives?
Well, what's not shown enough in the game film, again, DA, is that the Giants' defense figured this out in the second half. There was a lot of swarm tackling, and really Spike, as physical as he was, you know, eventually you get 10 of these kids on him, they're going to slow him down. He was no longer ripping off the big runs. Even if he was grinding things down, they were preventing him from getting first downs on the third downs. So really great job by the defensive coordinator there under Rick Moranis on the Giants' defensive staff, because even Kevin O'Shea knew, you know, eventually his running back was just getting worn down. There was not enough plays. Sean Murphy had given him nothing at quarterback, and that's what happened there.
It is one of the great collapses ever that the Cowboys can have a 21-0 lead, the Little Giants can lose Junior Floyd, their starting quarterback, and somehow claw their way all the way back, and the Cowboys collapse like the normal Cowboys. And so we find ourselves at 21-21. The Cowboys are going in for what would be essentially the game-winning touchdown with under 10 seconds to play. And at a fourth down, Kevin O'Shea decides to run Spike on the fourth down, and here comes Icebox from the sideline. She had been changed into a cheerleader for the game because she didn't want to play football anymore. She wanted to be more dainty. She wanted to be attractive to boys like Junior Floyd. Then, being so upset at halftime, she takes off her cheerleading outfit and throws on her jersey and helmet, but she continues wearing her skirt. I didn't agree with that move by Icebox. To me, you're going to have your legs cut up. You're obviously a dominant football player. Throw on your leg pads. It's just going to help everybody out. And in this case, because she has the instincts of a young Lawrence Taylor, she reads the play well, goes sideline to sideline, ends up tackling Spike before he gets pay dirt. Turnover on downs. Little Giants get the ball, likely playing for overtime. But before we get to that, why didn't AB Kevin O'Shea kick the chip shot field goal there? You take the three, you're up 24-21, and you go home with the win. Why are you running it on fourth down where things can go wrong?
DA, having called many dramatic high school football games in the tri-state area that have ended either mostly negatively thanks to kickers. I can only digress from there back to the Pop Warner level and guess that they just had no trust in their young kicker. It wasn't like they're going to walk Adam Vinatieri Jr. on the field to knock that one through, as sure as it might be. Spike running for one more yard, even on fourth down, seems like, and I don't have Pro Football Focus numbers in front of me, but that seems like the more likely positive outcome is Spike just putting his head down and getting a yard. The bigger thing to me is the little Giants and it's Junior's mom that sniffs out the play that's coming. And then Danny calls timeout to set up the defense. Then Kevin O'Shea recognizes that they know what's coming and puts his hands in his pocket. How does he not call his own timeout and then change the play to retake the advantage? I guess he just thinks Spike is going to figure it out no matter what. And lo and behold, he doesn't.
Also, give me a quarterback sneak there. You're looking for 1 yard. Do we need a toss sweep to Spike here, Mraz? It stretches out the offensive line and allows Icebox to make the play.
And again, though, as Bosch alluded to, it's Kevin O'Shea's ego wanting to go with the play that had rewarded him so well in a previous championship game on a personal level. He wanted that same thing for Spike. But DA in that spot, packed house, the crowd is going nuts. Loud chants of hold that line, hold that line, hold that line. If you're a defense, you are fired up hearing that. The eye black is on Icebox. All the pressure is on Spike. And really what I think is a fundamental collapse by the Cowboys' offensive line. There's no Flozell Adams there to push the pocket there on the right side. As Spike goes around to the left, unbelievable job. Nobody's going to pick up Becky the Icebox, who's the best defender on the field going sideline to sideline. We need a fullback laying a block there. The Cowboys' offensive scheme behind that offensive line, atrocious. That is why it's a disaster. They just relied on brute strength of Spike, and it came back to backfire. Again, I tell you, DA, 21-0 at the half. The Giant defense shut down that Cowboy offense in the second half. No points. No points. They shut down Spike. Sean Murphy non-existent. That was fantastic. And to hold that line of fourth down, just an incredible job. Kudos all around. It was like a young Bill Belichick running the defense for that Giant team.
Now, the little Giants take over with just one play left on the clock, a few seconds. They're inside their own five-yard line. They could easily take a knee and play to overtime. That would be a moral victory as well, of course. But they end up wanting to run one last play. Now, this is where the trick gadget plays little Giants once again comes into play. And I was a little shocked. They were so ineffective offensively in the first half, getting shut out 21-0. In the second half, they somehow pull off a flea flicker pass back to the quarterback that ends up being a big play in the game for them, and then the annexation of Puerto Rico. I'm not sure how, from a traditional standpoint, the little Giants are so bad offensively, and yet from a trick play standpoint, they're so devastating. But it takes us to the trick play of all trick plays, the annexation of Puerto Rico. Mraz, I'm going to defer to you. Can you explain how this play works? Because I've watched it a number of times with the game film. It's still kind of murky to me.
So basically the way I would look at it, and John Madden helped design this play the right way, because usually a running back would be involved, and ends up being the center involved. You're taking advantage of a bunch of 10-year-old kids in this spot who are not watching the ball. They're watching the movements. They're watching the snaps. They're not used to fake. So it's a turnaround, and it's a fake handoff into a reverse that looks completely real, and the defenders shift and completely follow the best player on the field. They're told by the coaches to fire Icebox. She rolls out. She's holding it like she has the ball. Spike goes over, but he goes to tackle. The whole time this is going on, the ball was never actually snapped, or it's sold like a fumbled snap. It's put down by Zoltek right below him, and he stands and holds the line.
It's
everybody
a fumble
rooski,
if you will.
Right.
This is what Kevin O'Shea mutters to himself at the sideline.
That's how it's legal. So the ball is just lying there, but everybody now is following the momentum of the players running. This allows open field for their slowest player, Zoltek, who we talked about, the peanut butter and jelly, to now pick it up at center and go steamrolling. And then it becomes a band is on the field situation. When he runs out of gas, Junior is following him, other players along the line, and it becomes pitchback, pitchback, pitchback. Let's see what can happen. Band is on the field. Cowboys defense is lost. They're already stuck in the mud back there, and the Giants end up finding a way to get the ball in the end zone here.
So it's a fake sweep to Icebox. They all follow Icebox. They commit. And then Zoltek has the ball. He starts running as the center picks it up. He then flips it back over his head. It's a lateral. Junior Floyd grabs it out of the air. He takes another 10 or 15 yards, then flips it back to the smallest player on the team who's snorting snot bubbles earlier in the movie, and he takes it the rest of the way for the win. Little Giants win in the most extravagant, exciting, exhilarating way possible, meaning that not only do the Little Giants now get to play and represent Urbana in the Pee Wee Football League, the Little Cowboys are out. Kevin O'Shea is out of a car dealership. Okay, so a lot of things have changed in one fell swoop, and yet here comes Kevin O'Shea. He wants his car dealership back, saying, hey, you know, little brother, that bet wasn't real. You can't take away my car dealership. I mean, how can he go, you know, how can he go against the grain of his bet here, Mraz? That, to me, is terrible sportsmanship by a Heisman Trophy winner.
Right, and you know he would have taken the gas station from his brother if he could.
Yeah.
From his brother. It's a pathetic job by a weasel and Kevin O'Shea, who did a bad job scheming, a bad job putting together his defense, and frankly a bad offense that he relied handing a ball to a guy he had signed one day earlier off the streets. Overall, Kevin O'Shea, for a Heisman Trophy winner, you realize why his NFL career fizzled out. Complete disaster. And you know what? If you're Danny O'Shea, in the end, you give back the car dealership and you get the O'Shea brothers on the water tower instead of just Kevin O'Shea. That's a win for him. That's what he wanted since he was a kid. So I can't fault Danny for what he wanted. But Kevin O'Shea, such a jerk. Go back. Go try to sell Camaros and get out of here.
Okay, we'll have more on the cutting room floor of Little Giants coming up as part of the PGP. But Andrew Bogish has our headlines right now. AB, what do we got?
DA, these headlines are sponsored by Geico, who has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility.
Pro boner.
Since the Canadian government will not let the Blue Jays host any teams in Toronto this summer, the team was basically homeless like Shep, but now Pittsburgh is the reported landing spot. The Pirates offered PNC Park earlier this week. The two teams only have one home date in common until early September, making this all possible. Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo should be in the starting lineup for today's exhibition finale. That would put him in his back inflammation in line to start opening day on Friday. The Dodgers have signed veteran lefty Jake McGee, whom the Rockies released last week, and the Orioles giving Tommy Malone the opening day start because of John Means' arm fatigue. The NFL has now reportedly agreed with the players on zero preseason games this summer. The union is still trying to get a longer ramp-up time for players once they report to training camp. Camp rosters expected to be 80 players instead of the usual 90 to make it easier to implement health and safety protocols. West Virginia and defensive coordinator Vic Koning say they are mutually parting ways after a month-long investigation into accusations of misconduct against Koning from safety Kerry Martin Jr. Kevin Garnett wants to buy the Timberwolves. KG says he's part of a group that'll bid on his former team, but the Wilfs, who own the Vikings, will be a problem. They're the assumed frontrunners in the early stages of this. Current owner Glenn Taylor said to want $1.2 billion for the team he has owned since the mid-90s. Clippers guard Pat Beverly apparently left the bubble last night for a personal emergency. He's expected back as soon as possible. LA and Orlando kick off the scrimmage schedule at Disney at 1 Mountain Time today. The Nets and Pelicans play at 7 Eastern. It's almost laughable. Justin Anderson, one of the players Brooklyn had to sign because four regulars stayed home because of COVID-19. Anderson revealed yesterday he was late to the bubble because he was finishing up NBA protocols after testing positive himself. So that is now the second replacement Net
wow.
with a positive test, joining Michael Beasley, who never actually got in uniform. And he's the 9th total Net to have had coronavirus at some point since March. As for soccer at Disney, they are playing right now, Real Salt Lake and Sporting KC, and KC has an early 1-0 lead. Last night, Montreal kept itself alive for the knockout stage with a 1-0 win over DC United after Columbus blanked Atlanta United 1-0. DC and Atlanta are now eliminated. DA, back to you.
Thank you, AB. What's even more amazing about that Net story is that the NBA recently tested 350 players and had zero positives. and yet the Nets have had 9 players test positive. What the hell? When we come back here on the show, Advanced Analytics on our poll question today, who choked worse in the big game? Kevin O'Shea, Little Giants, or Kyle Shanahan in the Super Bowl? TA, CBS Sports Radio.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Today's question is, after watching Little Giants, who choked worse in the big game? Was it Kevin O'Shea coaching the Dallas Cowboys, or the, in this case, Urbania Cowboys, with a 21-0 lead at halftime in the Little Giants? Or was it Kyle Shanahan up 28-3 in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, head of the offensive coordinator in Atlanta? Or in this year's Super Bowl, with a 10-point lead over the Kansas City Chiefs? On Twitter, 56% of you said Kyle Shanahan, still a bigger choker in the big game. On Facebook, 69% said it was Kyle Shanahan. Some little-known facts. Little Giants was inspired by an early 1990s McDonald's ad about Pee Wee football that ran during the Super Bowl. The day after it aired, Steven Spielberg liked it so much, he called up the ad's creator, James Ferguson, and hired him to write the script. Spielberg, behind Little Giants, loved the ad so much during the Super Bowl. As an infamous voice on these airwaves might say, how about that?
How about that?
Time now for your Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. As always, send us your questions by tweeting at me, DA on CBS. Thank O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Tom is in New Jersey, and he asks, DA, baseball season starts up tomorrow. Do you think that America is going to forget the labor negotiations and all of the hate that they got a couple of months ago? Yes and no. I think that people are absolutely excited about how baseball is back, games being back, sports in general being back gives everybody a little bit of hope. That's what we're all waiting for. That's what we're all kind of looking for, is a little bit of hope. Hope that on the horizon things are better. And psychologically, that's where sports comes in. A lot of people have lost their job. A lot of people have had financial hardships. People may have lost loved ones during this. People have certainly been shut in and life has been overturned, vacations canceled, travel plans canceled, etc. And I think what people just need is the idea that it's getting better. And when you have spikes in many states, and now even the president encouraging everybody to wear masks after that was some type of political battleground, you just want something to make you believe that there's improvement. Sports is going to provide that. Sports coming back is not just a diversion. It's also symbolic that we can figure this out and solve it in some ways. That's important. Sports are still a business. And if these businesses are figuring out ways to execute the business, that's a plus. So I think people are really looking forward to that. And I also think that what baseball went through in terms of hurting themselves, shooting themselves in the foot from a PR standpoint doesn't necessarily go away with that. Baseball will always be seen as the league that couldn't get its act together this time around and only played 60 games. And when labor negotiations get hot the next time around, people will remember this. People are excited now about baseball, but that does not erase what everybody remembers happening just a couple of weeks ago. Our toll-free line is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. It's time now for your epic fail of the morning. And I would say that Bogish had a bit of a boo-boo, a bit of a slip-up at his first day back after vacation. Here is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
How about we give Florida man a rest for today and go with Long Island man, 25-year-old Robert Berger of Huntington, Long Island, was to be sentenced for to a year in jail back in October.
Hickory dickory dock.
For possession of a stolen Lexus and attempted larceny of a truck. But Mr. Berger took off back in October, and while on the lam, tried to convince his lawyer, prosecutors, and the judge that he had died. Hmm. Berger's girlfriend even got a pro bono. Berger's girlfriend even got a pro bono.
I have a big wiener in my hand.
Public defender lawyer to submit a death certificate from Jersey. Yeah, I said it.
And that magical feeling pulsates through the shaft.
It apparently... Berger's girlfriend even got a pro bono. Mark that, Pete. Pro bono. It was apparently this death certificate. Here's the original stunning part of this segment.
I have a big wiener in my hand.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Well, from a DA show standpoint, today was a rousing success. Because forget hot sports takes. Forget sports films being broken down like they were the Zapruder film or the game film of Super Bowl 36. Forget the interview with Anthony Munoz or Brian Bolello of the New York or the New England Revolution. For one brief glorious moment, Bogus said boner.
And yeah, that would be for those, yeah, for those scoring at home, that would be my third such career slip up.
Oh, really?
Back, yeah,
wow, there's an official scoreboard?
Yeah, way back in the day, I gave Matt Hasselbeck a bulging, you know what, not a disc, a bolt. That's so that happened. That was pre-CBS Sports Radio. On CBS Sports Radio, Pete will remember this, we had a sponsorship read for updates, Werner Ladders. Whatever, however the ladder was constructed, the selling point was it can work in every direction. Direction somehow became something that sounds like direction.
Whoa.
That one was extra embarrassing because I was alerted to saying it by the one and only Sweetie Murdy, who had to be listening that day. My phone buzzes from Sweeney saying, "Did you just say blah 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 and not direction?" So that was extra embarrassing. That Sweeney, a guy I respect, was listening, heard it, and let me know that I had said that. And then we get to today. So that's all three.
Whoa!
Wow.
Yeah.
So now Elias has all of those locked and loaded for sports analysis. Sweeney Murdy, longtime broadcaster and Yankees reporter. And yeah, he's a great broadcaster. So I'm glad now we have the official band names and numbers retired on the wall. And then one day we have to have all of Bogish's retired slip-ups on the wall as well that we raise to the rafters.
Pro boner. Yeah. We also had
All our package situations.
Yeah, you missed that while you were gone. Sean was expressing his love for hot dogs. And somehow dogs got an N thrown in the middle. Proudly, too, from Sean.
Yeah, I knew that it happened because my Twitter timeline blew up when it happened. And kind of like whether rabbits can milk their young, I just didn't really want to know. I turned off my Twitter. And that was that. Because, you know, you guys will fill in tomorrow and Friday. And
as of now.
I know this is going to happen. Yeah. I know this is going to happen. Mraz will say something or something pseudo-offensive will happen or unbelievable. And my timeline will blow up and I won't have context. And I'll just be like, okay, closing Twitter. Don't want to know anything more about this. I'm walking away from the smoking rubble of the DA show and I'll see you on Monday. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and Audio Director. Thanks to Billy Jacquelot, your associate producer today. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. And Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA on the simulcast. Like I said, off tomorrow and Friday. So listen to Bogues and Mraz of the gang tomorrow and Friday. The Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.